Well, I'm grateful to Dave and Dennis for solving the problem of the mic and the light. Light has shone in the darkness, you guys. It's right here. Thank you. Let's come before God in prayer. Dear God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable and pleasing in your sight, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Well, I spent this past week in Louisiana as part of an MCC learning tour. The focus of the tour was mass incarceration. We made several stops on the pipeline to prison. It was intense and transformative. I feel a bit like the blind man in our story today from the Gospel of John. I had mud on my eyes, it was washed off, and now I see. Seeing and then accepting the truth of what we see is sometimes difficult, especially when what we see challenges our assumptions about the way things are or the way things are meant to be. This is true when it comes to the pervasive systemic racial injustice in this country, and it was also true in our story from the Gospel of John. Folks didn't want to believe what they saw right in front of them. David Arlisle, senior pastor of Grace Lutheran Church in River Forest, Illinois, reflects on this story from the Gospel of John, chapter 9, in the March 1 issue of the Christian Century magazine. And I really, really liked what he had to say about it, so I want to share his words with you. David Lyle writes, "It's difficult to feel sorry for people who get to spend their work day at baseball games. Even so, umpires, it's hard not to feel at least a little bit of sympathy for umpires. As the old saying goes, umpires are supposed to be perfect from day one and get better from then on. Any failure to achieve perfection is met with calls of derision. Hey, ump, are you blind? How could you not see that?" Mr. Lyle writes, "As a lifelong fan of the Kansas City Royals, I'll never forget the first base umpire blowing a call late in Game 6 of the 1985 World Series. Even people with perfectly good eyesight sometimes fail to see things that are right in front of them." The contrast between sight and blindness is at the heart of the extended scene that plays out in John 9. It is the story of an unnamed man born blind who regains his sight, told in contrast to those who were born with sight and yet are unable to see what is right in front of them. The sign at the beginning of this story from John seems straightforward enough, albeit miraculous. Jesus and his disciples encounter a blind man. The disciples want to turn this man's existence into a theology class, a consideration of whose sin caused the blindness. Jesus isn't interested. He sees instead an opportunity to show forth the power of God. In short, he heals the man. John's readers would not be faulted for assuming that joyful celebration would ensue. Instead, we get a tragicomedy populated by people who simply refuse to acknowledge what they can plainly see with their own perfectly functional eyes. It begins with the neighbors, who have a hard time seeing that this man is the same man who was once blind, even though nothing else about his appearance had changed. Next, it's the Pharisees, blinded by their rigid interpretation of the law. Jesus heals the man on the Sabbath, and no righteous person would do that. Therefore, some of them insist, Jesus must be a sinner, not a healer. In spite of the walking, talking evidence right in front of them, they are blind to God's power in their midst. The man's own parents, blinded by fear of the Pharisees, fail to see that God is doing a new thing that transcends the authority of the Pharisees and even the law itself. Neighbors, Pharisees, parents, they all can see that Jesus restored the blind man's sight, and they all fail to see it for what it is. They are all blind in one way or another to Jesus, the light of the world. It is only the man who was once physically blind who can see Jesus for who he is, the Son of Man who has come to bring light and sight to this world. Those who can see become blind. Those who were blind will see. Jesus uses this sign of power and healing to continue to John uses this sign of power and healing to continue the unfolding of his great theme of the contrast between light and darkness, upending our false assumptions along the way. We like to say that seeing is believing, yet when Jesus clearly demonstrates the compassionate power of God, we look for reasons not to believe. John invites us to see ourselves in the disciples, neighbors, Pharisees, and parents. We are those who prefer not to see what is right in front of our noses, who would prefer to live in the darkness we know, rather than open our eyes to the blinding, brilliant light of God's presence in our midst. Still, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness does not overcome it. Light shining in the darkness, that's what this past week felt like for me. For 4 days, our diverse group of 19 people entered into a world that for many of us has been dark. We couldn't see into it. We didn't want to have to see into it. But together and with the help of very good local guides, we followed the light. We learned about modern-day slavery in our penal system. It's a system that targets young black males, labels them criminal, and throws them into prison. 1 in 3 black males in the U.S. ends up in prison. This means a lot of families and communities torn apart. Lots of kids grow up without fathers or male role models, and they act out. Schools punish them. They choose to punish and expel rather than work on the difficult root causes. So kids end up in jail. This is the pipeline to prison. And folks make money, lots of money in the process. The for-profit prison industry earns money from housing bodies in their facilities. They earn money by providing inmate labor to companies. Companies earn money by using labor that costs them virtually nothing. In Angola prison, for instance, inmates earn two cents an hour. This allows companies like Costco and Walmart and so many others to sell us products at relatively low cost. All of this takes place in the dark. Our eyes are intentionally blind. We do not see. In the darkness, writes David Lyle, we have the luxury of having conversations about sins and sufferings of others without acknowledging our own sin. In the darkness, we are free to pretend that we don't see the suffering and pain of those around us, that we are not called to respond with love and healing. Jesus, however, has not come to enable us to remain in the darkness. Jesus has come to bring sight to the blind, even those who believe they can already see. In the bizarre grace of God, Jesus does not remain at a distance from us. He enters into the muddiness of this world and gets his hands dirty for our sake. Jesus takes all of the deep darkness and willful blindness of this world upon himself on the cross, and he does so to open our eyes. This means opening our eyes and our hearts in compassion for those who suffer. But first, it means opening our eyes to the presence of Jesus, the Word made flesh, the glory of God shining hard and bright in his death and resurrection. As it was for the man born blind, so it is for us. We stare into the eyes of the Son of Man. We fall down and worship the one who has banished the darkness. And once we see Jesus, we are no longer free to be blind. Those who worship Christ are called to see what is right in front of our eyes. The hungry, the homeless, the displaced, the terrorized, the marginalized. The people of God no longer have the luxury or the capacity to ignore those in need. We cannot trust our own sight. Even the best umpires make the wrong call from time to time. Thankfully, in and through Jesus, we don't have to trust our eyes. We simply have to trust him as he reveals over and over again the work God continues to accomplish right in front of us. It's the end of the words I was quoting from David Lyle. Once we see Jesus, we are no longer free to be blind. Those who worship Christ are called to see what is right in front of our eyes. The hungry, the homeless, the displaced, the terrorized, the marginalized, those who are in prison, those who are being exploited for our benefit. Dear God, give us the courage to enter into these dark places. Open our eyes so that we can see. I'd like you to please join me now in reading together the litany that is on the insert in your bulletin. O God, you open our eyes to see what is true. We confess that sometimes it is easier for us to stay blind than to embrace the fullness of your truth. Your truth exposes our hidden secrets, upsets our expectations, and establishes a new order where we are no longer leading the way. Forgive us, O Lord, when we would rather stay in the darkness of our current reality instead of receiving your miracle of light and new life. God, who brings all things into the light. The Lord is our shepherd, we shall not want. Though we cannot see through the valley of the shadow of death, God is with us. We will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Amen.
Please turn to hymn number 517. Number 517.